Hi everyone, welcome to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorced Girl Smiling, the website, the podcast, and the mobile app. Divorce is really hard for everybody, but I think it would be especially hard for people getting divorced who are divorcing a narcissist. Especially when it comes to co-parenting, I can't even imagine what that would be like. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to offer tips for co-parenting with a narcissist. And to have this conversation with me and offer the tips, I have divorce attorney Catherine Miller on the show. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, Jackie. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Catherine is a divorce attorney based in New York, has offices in New York and Connecticut. She's also a certified mediator and a collaborative divorce professional. And Catherine wrote an article for Divorced Girl Smiling called Seven Tips for Co-Parenting with a Narcissist. How long have you been an attorney, Catherine?
I don't think I look it, but 36 years.
You definitely don't look it. And I'm not just saying that.
Thank you.
And you really try to settle every case through mediation or the collaborative process, correct?
Absolutely, if it's at all possible. And even if we're not able to work in mediation or the collaborative process, negotiating a settlement is what most people end up doing. So even if we're in a kind of a faux litigation or a kind of somewhat litigation format, or even if people just want to have their help, get the help of their attorneys to help negotiate a deal, that's what we always try to do.
So let's talk about somebody who's getting divorced from a narcissist. Now, I am of the opinion that many, many, many people getting divorced call their spouse a narcissist, just because during that time, people can tend to get narcissistic during a divorce, but that doesn't mean you're a narcissist. So I'm a little skeptical when I hear everybody saying, you know, my husband's a narcissist. Why are you getting divorced? Oh, because my wife's a narcissist. So tell me your definition and what you think a narcissist is.
Well, I mean, it really depends on whether or not you're talking about a diagnosable narcissist. And I think that is really what we're talking about. But there's really two possibilities. One, and I don't think this is a narcissist in a diagnosable way, but it definitely does happen a lot, particularly when people are getting divorced, is that somebody's just, you know, self-centered.
Right.
You know, they see it their way. They don't see it your way. They think they're right. You're pretty sure they're wrong. Like, that's like just what people do when they're in conflict. You know, when you're getting, you're dating and you're in the romantic phase of your relationship, then people can be a lot more compassionate to each other. But once they have made the decision or the relationship has gone, if I might say, downhill to the point where there's really a communication breakdown, then there's not a lot of, generosity between the spouses or partners toward the other person. And so they are, you know, self-centered. And that can seem as if it's narcissistic, but that's not what I'm really talking about here.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head. When people are getting divorced, they're very self-centered, which is normal. It's not even a cut down. And they're very focused on themselves. And so people might tend to think they're acting like a narcissist, even if there isn't. But for the purpose of this discussion and co-parenting tips with a narcissist, this could mean whether your spouse is a diagnosed narcissist or whether he or she is just acting like a narcissist, correct?
Yes, except for let's just, Jackie, talk about what an actual diagnosable narcissist is and
okay.
What they can and cannot do. Because an actual narcissist, like a full-blown narcissist, cannot feel empathy. And so they cannot. And so if you are actually married to a narcissist, by gosh, you know it, because they can fake it. They can seem extremely charming, because diagnosable narcissists are very good at picking up clues on what's going to make them work, the relationship work for them, okay? And that might be to tell you nice things that you want to hear, but they don't feel any actual empathy. And they also judge themselves at the far end of the extreme, really, from the outside. So the way the world sees them, they sort of see themselves in the eyes of other people, and that's how they judge themselves, for better or for worse. And those two combinations can seem very self-centered. But one thing that is really important about understanding, if you are divorcing a narcissist, people always want the narcissist spouse then to have some empathy and to care about them in the way they care, that the person who's upset about this cares. And the thing that I say to my clients who really are divorcing a narcissist is that a narcissist isn't refusing to see it your way. They cannot. It's like saying to somebody who does not have a right arm, well, you know what, just pick up that bag of groceries with your hands and mm-hmm. carry it across a room, you know, into the kitchen, because they can't do it. And it's just not fair to ask them to. Does that make it fun? No. Does it make it easy? Absolutely not. But it's just asking someone to do something they can't do isn't fair.
Mm-hmm. And maybe they're just acting like a narcissist during the divorce. So maybe they can't do it during the divorce, but then maybe after the divorce, if they were not a diagnosed narcissist, they could go back to being less narcissistic.
For sure. For mm-hmm. sure. And they all might not be on the far end of the spectrum either. People can have narcissistic tendencies, which are certainly, as we're talking about here, exacerbated by the divorce or anything else that's really difficult like that. But that when things are a little nicer, things are easier, and maybe they're not so triggered.
100%. Why is it so hard to parent with a narcissist? What is it?
Well, I think there are a number of things, and one of the things that I just mentioned a minute or two ago is that a narcissist can be very good at drawing you into the battle, because remember, he or she is viewing him or herself in your eyes. So if they're able to kind of create a reaction in you, then they feel good about that, and because they created that reaction, and that is maddening for the rest of us, because it's hard enough, you know, even when you're married and you're not getting divorced, you're raising your children, parents often disagree about how to raise their children and what's good parenting and whether or not they should have this kind of discipline or that kind of curfew or whatever. And those are the kinds of things that bring up a lot of feeling in us, because you know what, most of us want to be good parents, right? And so if it feels like you just cannot have a conversation with the other person where there's any empathy for your view at all when on something that is so important, then that is just, it drives people around the bend.
I think there's hundreds of people listening to this right now going, yes, this is me. This is my life. You just described me. All right.
Well, I know that from personal, not just professional experience.
Let's move on. In the article, you talk about co-parenting versus parallel parenting. Tell me what that means.
Yeah. So co-parenting is perhaps what we all think about when we think about a good divorce, right? We are parenting our children together. We're having conversations about their well-being, the decisions we're going to make for them. Discipline carries from one person's house to the other parent's house. And the children feel us really as a parental unit, even if we're not married to each other anymore. And it's an involved and mutually supportive parenting relationship. Parallel parenting is, well, you parent the kids when they're with you. I parent them with me. We talk about, you know, the doctor's appointment. We go to a parent-teacher conference together, or we don't. But we're not really talking about our parenting together. And there may be some bridging over because we show up at a game or something. But other than that, you do you, I'll do me, and never the twain shall meet.
All right, now why is that bad?
It's not bad. It's not bad if it keeps the conflict down. So if you're going to try to have a co-parenting relationship, right? But you're fighting all the time because you both think that you want what's best for the children, which I'm sure both people do, but you can't agree on what that is. So there's a lot of conflict. then that is bad. So having high conflict between divorced parents or between parents of any kind, divorced or not, is the absolute worst thing possible. So yeah, if you can have a co-parenting relationship without a lot of conflict, then you should do it. But if you cannot, then you should parallel parent, because that conflict is way worse.
What are some of the downsides of parallel parenting?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Jackie. So some of the, it's that can be extremely frustrating. So let's say your kid does something that really breaks the rules in your house and you ground them for a week. You know, they go to dad's house. He's like, I don't care what Jackie said. You're not grounded here. Maddening.
That would drive me insane.
Right. Maddening. You say, you know what? You're not old enough to get your ears pierced, but they go to dad's house and come back with pierced ears. You know, these are the kinds of things that are, and that one happened to me, actually.
Yes.
You know, that's the kind of thing that just makes you feel like, what the heck am I supposed to do here? And not only that, but every time I put my foot down, I do something that is hard to do as a parent. No one likes to ground their kid or say no to something the kid really wants. Who likes to do that? But you do it because you think it's best for your kid. And then all they have to do, you know, to go get what they want is ask the other parent, who may, and this is something a narcissist is likely to do it just to get back at you. Oh, you know what? I'm going to make myself look good to Junior because mom said no, or dad's, you know, whatever. And you get these kinds of things all the time. So that's what's bad about parallel parenting, because it really encourages splitting between the children, meaning that the children will say what mom wants to hear to mom and what dad wants to hear to dad, or two moms or two dads, whatever the situation is. And then the parents are really then angry at the other parent because they said, well, you know what? Junior told me he never wants to go to your house. Well, really? Junior told me he never wants to go to your house, which is probably true. Junior probably said the same thing to each parent, or said words that could be interpreted that way by the parent who's looking to interpret it that way. And so because it doesn't make Junior bad. It's what normal kids do to make them feel safer and closer to each parent when they're with that parent. And when you're parallel parenting, then you don't really have the opportunity to say, well, that's really interesting that Junior said that to you and this to me. So what can we do to come together so the Junior feels that that's not necessary and that we're mutually supportive of each other as parents?
No, because there's no mutually supportive of each other. So parallel parenting can make parents frustrated. It can also weaken your ability to parent the way you want. And then the other thing is, you're right, kids, they learn the system. And if mom says no, they know dad's going to say yes. So they really take advantage of it.
Yeah, they can really take advantage of it. And so that's why it's bad. But if you're going to be fighting all the time, that is better. It is better to have parallel parenting, deal with the frustrations, and not fight in front of the kids.
Got it. You're listening to the Divorced Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, Catherine Miller, a New York and Connecticut-based divorce attorney, and we are talking co-parenting with a narcissist. We're going to get into 7 tips of co-parenting with a narcissist. Before we move on, I want to mention 2 Divorced Girl Smiling partners that I think you're going to want to know about. The first person I want to mention is Rita Morris, who is a parenting coach. She is a life coach and a therapist, and her whole practice is dedicated to co-parenting and single parenting. And the reason I think it's important to mention Rita is that Catherine and I are talking about tips for co-parenting with a narcissist. And if you are in this situation, you might want to reach out to Rita. She offers counseling for couples who are trying to co-parent. And she also offers help to people who have a difficult ex in co-parenting and dealing with that. She can be reached on Divorced Girl Smiling under the Trusted Partner section, or you can find her at aparentspath.com. The next person I want to mention is my newest Divorced Girl Smiling partner, and her name is Karen Covey. Karen is a wonderful divorce coach. Karen is a divorce attorney and a divorce mediator who has turned her practice solely into divorce coaching. She's been doing this for such a long time. She is so experienced, and she's such a warm and compassionate person, and I am psyched to have her as a Divorce Girl Smiling partner. And you can find Karen on Divorce Girl Smiling, or you can also find her at karencovey.com. So moving on, let's get into the 7 tips for co-parenting with a narcissist. And Catherine, I'm going to read each tip and then you can explain it.
Okay.
All right. The first one is manage your own triggers.
Yeah, that's super important. So one thing, you cannot control the other person, and certainly you cannot control a narcissist, because you're going to have even less influence with a narcissist than you are with somebody else. But you can control yourself. And so it's really important to not allow yourself to react in the way that the narcissistic parent is trying to get you to react. Because when you do that, you let him control your behavior. And that is not something you want to do. You want to make sure that you can have a reaction, but find a way to manage it so that you don't show it when in the moment.
And what can you do to manage it? Any ideas?
Well, one thing is to not have face-to-face conversations where you know you're going to be triggered. Write down the things that are really triggering you. Work with a coach who can be really helpful in getting you to a place where you are not triggered any longer. You know, one thing that really worked for me, I had this really kind of amazing experience where my ex-husband was really angry at me about a parenting thing, and I think it was because I was late when he was there to pick up the kids, and I was late coming back from the mall or something like that, and he was furious at me. And we were on the phone about it, and I just listened to what he said, and I said, so the way that you see it, when I'm late, I'm disrespecting you as a parent, and that feels really bad to you, and it makes you really angry when I do that. Is that right? So you see, I'm just like reflective listening. And at the end of the conversation, I said, do you think I understand where you're coming from in this issue? And he said, yeah, you know, I do. And I said, are you interested in hearing my perspective? And he said, not really. And he hung up. And Jackie, it was like, I mean, you could think, oh, my God, what a jerk. But I thought to myself, you know what? I'm free, because he doesn't care what I think.
And at least you tried and got it out there.
Yep.
So that's all you can do. You can just control how you act and what you say to him.
Yep. And once I did that, and I could just, you know, just affirm him that I heard where he was coming from, then, but somehow or other, when he said, no, I'm not interested, like, all of that, my own personal triggers just kind of like went away. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just never going to be able to work this out in the way that I would have wanted. I would have wanted a really good co-parenting relationship, but he didn't want that. And so we weren't going to have it.
Well, there might be people listening thinking, if that happened to me, I might be upset that I even tried. And I don't know how you feel, Catherine, but I think you did the right thing, even though he didn't respond and didn't want it. Like, at least you did it. So what if he doesn't want it? Then at least you know you tried.
I think that's exactly right. But it's not just knowing that you tried. Like, this was an incredibly empowering experience for me to be able to show him that I could hear him and then move on from that. Because I don't think I lost anything by doing that. I think I gained something. I gained 100%. My own power back.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Number 2 of the 7 tips, set clear boundaries.
Yeah, this goes a lot with the first one, because if you've got those clear boundaries, you're less likely to allow yourself to be triggered in a bad moment. And so be really clear. This is what time it is, right? But you gotta walk your own boundary too, right? So you say 10 o'clock. I mean, I know, I realize I just told you a story about how I was late, but you know, it's 10 o'clock, it's 10 o'clock. You cannot come here. You cannot call this number. I will not talk to you. Don't text me after 7. And then don't text back if they do. If you set a boundary, you've got to walk that boundary. And narcissists do very well with boundaries. And if you say, this is the rule, I'm setting it, they'll test it a time or two. But if you stick to it, you're going to really manage the situation, your own feelings, much better than if you don't.
I love that. It's like putting down the rules and then sticking to them, and that's it.
Yeah, no matter what. You're going to stick to it no matter what.
And it's kind of like training a toddler or like a puppy.
Yes, it definitely is that. Exactly. And listen, what's more narcissistic than a toddler?
That's funny. All right, moving on to number three, document everything.
Yeah. Do not rely on any verbal agreements. So if you agree, this is how we're gonna meet this time, you're gonna pick up that time, we're gonna go to the doctor, send a text or an email, just clarifying, this is what we agreed, right? And so when you go back and they say, we never agreed to that, you can go back and say, you see on this email that I sent on October 10th, we agreed XYZ, oh yeah, here it is. So you can see why I think that this is what we agreed to, because here it is, right? And that's what you want to make sure, that everything, every verbal agreement is also documented in an email or text later.
Especially if the person is not adhering to things. And then if you need to go to court later, you have a journal also, so that's a benefit.
For sure. For sure. But that, you know, what you're talking about is a journal. So that's another thing, Jackie, that I think is really important. So it can be useful if you're dealing with a narcissistic co-parent to keep a journal of things that didn't go so well, right? And but you got to keep it contemporaneously, all right? So keep it by your bedside, you know, on Sunday, 2 hours late to pick up. On Tuesday, didn't show up for dinner. On Friday, called and tore me a new one because I didn't send a scarf in the backpack, whatever it is. Just so, because if you're going to court, if you have a contemporaneous writing, that can be admissible to help you testify that this actually happened instead of just really a he said, she said situation. Well, what's the court supposed to do with that? You say this, he says that. Who are they supposed to believe?
Right. And in your journal, write down the dates too.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. The date, what happened, the situation, so that you at least will know what it means. And don't think that a little shorthand is going to work. Write it out in longhand with a real description, because 2 years later, you might not remember, even if you think you'll never forget.
So I would buy a separate book, a journal book, just for this purpose. And also it plays a big role if somebody has a substance abuse problem or is doing something that you feel like is potentially harmful for the kids. So, you know, if you say he dropped off the kids and he looked like he had been drinking or something like that, that is very powerful in court.
Yep.
Number four, put the kids first.
Yeah, and really live that. So that means if the kids are there, don't have a knockdown, drag out fight, no matter what. Even if it feels like it makes you vulnerable, even if he says the most outrageous thing or she says the most outrageous thing, you're going to choose, you know, agree to disagree and walk away from the fight and live to fight another day. Your kids do not need to see you fighting. And, you know, once upon a time, I was having lunch somewhere with a group of people, and we ran into a psychiatrist who did a lot of testifying in custody trials. And I said to him, hey, Larry, just tell me one thing that you think is the biggest mistake that people make all the time. He said, you know, The advice that I have for parents, and I say it to them all the time, is both of you want what's best for the children. And it would be better for you to do what you think is not best for the children and not fight about it than to fight about it even if you feel it's the best thing. Now, maybe that's not true for every single thing, like going to the doctor or something like that, but when it comes down to it, the argument could be worse for your children than making any one single wrong decision. Mm-hmm, it's kind of an interesting perspective.
Because these kids will remember this and have it in their heads forever. And it's damaging.
It is.
Number five, be the rock.
Yeah. So listen, if you're co-parenting with a narcissist, your kids have it worse, and that's they're being parented by one. And so someone needs to be the rock. Someone needs to be the emotional support. Someone needs to be the grown-up. And that someone is you. And even though that is painful and difficult and sometimes means sucking it up when you don't want to, or you want to tell them the truth, but you're like, they don't really, it's not going to help them to hear it. Go tell your girlfriends or your pals or your therapist or your coach or your mother, your father, or somebody else, but be the rock for your kids so that they have a safety and a place in the storm that they can go to. And it also means that, well, this goes into the next one. May I go into the next one?
Sure, sure.
Which is about building resistance in your kids and resilience. And so helping your children deal and learn coping mechanisms for dealing with that person as their parent, and so that they can not think that it's really about them and think that the world is just a crazy making place.
You know what's so interesting? A lot of divorced women will say to me, my kids just love my husband, so my ex-husband, so much more. And I say, why would you say that? And they go, because he's the fun one. He's the one who's always buying them the expensive electronics. Everything's great. And then when they get to my house, I'm, you know, just nagging them, they feel like, to do homework. And I'm the serious one, and it's not fun. And you know what I say? I go, let me tell you something. You are the rock. You are the one that is, like, your ex-husband is, sure, the fun one. And kids love both of their parents, always. But don't ever think because a kid is having more fun, in I'm saying that with quotation marks,
sure,
that they love your ex more. You are their rock. I mean, you are the one that is, they lean on for everything. And so, especially if you're with a narcissist, and I shouldn't put genders on this. It might be the other way around, but I just typically hear it from women. Even married women will say, you know, I'm always the one who's like the nag and dad's the fun one. But really, kids, you don't see it, but they love you and need you to be really strong and normal and know that you have their back.
Yeah, you're providing the nurturance. There's no having fun if they don't feel fed and they're not well taken care of. So, and they know that at a very deep level. But something, Jackie, that can be a really big mistake for that mom to do is to take that out onto the kids. Right. So if you're angry at the father, whether or not you're married to him or not in this circumstance that we're talking about here, and you feel like homework needs to happen, don't scream at your kids. Listen, you can't go out and play ball with your dad until your homework is done. It's not fair that he gets to do all the fun stuff and I just have to ask you, make you do your homework. Like, that's just going to take away from that relationship.
Yeah, like you're not allowed to say that.
Exactly. That's right. I think that goes back to number four, kids first.
But, you know, the kids, even they know it. They don't really mean it. Like the fun, they're just infatuated and they're so excited about fun things because they're kids. But I always tell these moms, they love you so much and they need you. So don't ever feel insecure.
Yeah. And I mean, that can be hard at times because, especially if you're getting divorced, you can feel like insecure about so many things. And I know you talk to so many people who are getting divorced, Jackie, and you know that to be true. But this is the thing, you know your kids, right? You've been there their whole lives and you know that you're their rock and the most important person to creating a safe, loving home for them. And never ever question that that's what you're doing, because if you don't question it, you'll do a much better job continuing it even when things get tough. And this takes us to the seventh tip, which is about building support in your community, right? So you have a place to go so that you have You yourself have sustenance. You have support. You have advice. You have someone to cry to, and you have someone to hold you up and to give you the strength to go on. You know, when I got remarried, I looked around. It was such a funny thing. I was pregnant, and I was like, you know what? There has to be a stepmoms group, right? There has to be. It's such an important thing. I don't know any other stepmoms, and I opened up like a parenting newspaper at the pediatrician's office where I was, and there was like, you know, basically calling all stepmoms, like a little one of those little ads. And I'm like, oh my God, the universe is answering my prayer. And I went to this little support group for stepmoms for a couple of years, and it was really, really helpful for me to be like, oh, because my friends, you know, didn't know what I was going through.
They didn't understand. Even though they're dear friends, they just didn't understand.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they would say stuff, and it would be like, yeah, but that's not that helpful. Like, this other stepmoms, you know, some of them became really good friends of mine, but just the fact that they were going through what I was going through was really helpful. And I think that if you're divorcing a narcissist, there are so many places where you can get that kind of support, but I definitely don't want to discount professional support, because that kind of targeted help is really, really helpful.
Well, I think you bring up something at a perfect time, because I actually just launched the Divorced Girl Smiling Club, which is an opportunity for women going through a divorce to go to online support groups that I'm offering. So if you want to learn more about that, go to Divorced Girl Smiling and go to the tab that says the DGS Club. And classes are starting, not classes, they're meetings, support group meetings on January 10th. So thanks for that lead into the plug, Catherine.
Well, but, you're welcome, but it's super important. I think it's a really good opportunity for people who are looking for community.
And you also said professional help. And yes, the Divorced Girl Smiling Club is professional, but that's more of a peer support group. If you really need support from a professional, you could go to a divorce coach, a therapist, of course. And honestly, it will help you so much more than you thought, especially in co-parenting, and especially if you're married to a narcissist.
Absolutely.
Catherine, thank you so much for being on the show. This is wonderful. Great, great tips. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm always happy to be helpful if I can.
If anybody would like to reach Catherine, she can be reached at miller-law.com. Or you can also find her on Divorced Girl Smiling. And if you want to read more articles, listen to more podcasts, find other great professional resources, including Catherine, go to divorcedgirlsmiling.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you real soon.